Uh-oh.
I can hear you now.
Fabulous. All right. Thank you, Sue.
I had unmuted in another place. There's like
Okay.
multiple places you can mute or unmute, so I don't know why I had it unmuted.
It's a common occurrence. So I will introduce the last case on our calendar this morning. It's, and I apologize if I mispronounce, is it Howd or Howdy versus Frexel?
I go
And
Scooty, but
Howdy.
Mr. Hawley can.
Okay. Then this case is being heard on Zoom, as we've established with our mute difficulties, and we all have them. We would note that the rules for oral argument are the same. Each party will have 15 minutes for their principal argument, and then appellant will have an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal. Please be mindful of the time remaining on the clock, as shown in the timer on the, at least on my screen, the upper right-hand corner, and attempts by any of the judges to interrupt you for questioning. With that, we'll hear arguments from counsel for appellant, and if you would state your name for the record before beginning, would appreciate it.
Are we
You
ready?
may proceed. Yes.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. I think I've met all of you except maybe Judge Bjorkman. It's nice to meet all of you again. I think I've seen you. Anyway, to start my argument this morning, one of the things I want to bring to the attention of the court is I think you can see from the paperwork which I filed, is I believe that. You can see that the fundamental part of a harassment order is that the person is in fear for their life or in fear of something. But when you look at this, what happened is just for instance, is if you go to page AA26 of my appendix. Or addendum, I'm sorry. And it says that my client violated his criminal probation. So what happened was at right after this hearing that the court grants, the referee grants this order, the Mr. Hawley and apparently Miss LePage manipulate my client's already on probation for something that happened 5 years ago. They manipulate them to manipulate my client to sign that provision in that thing that talks about violating for manipulative communication. Never, it wasn't in there. And this wasn't had nothing to do with the complainant in this case. It had to do with his ex-wife. So they manipulate his conditions of probation on that other case and change them by using this harassment order, which I believe is unethical conduct. And I'm going to report it to the bar. I
Well,
think it was,
Mr.
yeah.
Dahl, explain to me what impact that has on the issue before our court in this case.
What I was explaining to you, the issue it has on this case is that this person has to be, the statute says that she has to be, have fear for her safety or security. It tends to show she certainly doesn't have fear for her safety and security when she's using it to try to get my client's criminal probation revoked. Just another example I'll give you right here. So, in the ex parte order from the referee, it says other sharing false information with community members and treatment professionals, et cetera, sharing whatever, AA, it's AA18. So, the professional my client shared this with was his counselor. And that person was Mr. Markwartson over at Compass Counseling in Nisswa. And he'd had that counselor for 5 years. And they happened to go, him and Miss Hootie, to a couple counseling sessions. And he confided in him that he believed she was cheating on him and maybe the relationship was over or whatever. And so.
Did the district court base any of its findings, the underlying findings with respect to whether harassment occurred on any statements your client may have made to his counselor? I don't see it in the order.
This is in the original ex parte order. And what I'm telling you is that the referee had already made her decision at the time that this had happened. And that's because apparently, I don't know to the extent that Mr. Hawley helped her draft it, but they were trying to besmirch him with something he said, which was is there's no contest that that's a privileged statement, whatever he says to his counselor. And she falsely represents that, and she knowing that it's his counselor too, she just represents right to the court multiple times. And then they use that to get the ex parte, which once you get the ex parte, it's always hard to get that undone. So it's manipulation to the nth degree. And part of the
Counsel, can I, Judge Larkin, here I have a question for you. If I understand what you're arguing, you're essentially saying the district court erred in finding petitioner in the underlying procedure more credible than your client. I mean, it really comes down to a credibility determination. What you're arguing here is, well, she's not afraid. Look, the evidence shows she's not afraid. Therefore, you shouldn't believe her when she said she was. Felt harassed, and you should not have granted this HRO. Is that what your argument is?
Yeah, it's a not that and more.
Okay,
She keeps
but
she kept.
as to that, we defer to the finder of facts' credibility determinations. We don't get into reweighing the evidence, deciding who's credible. I mean, in that sense, frankly, your reply brief, which reads like a closing argument, is really not useful to us because we're not going to retry this case. We're looking for assignment of error, error that's established, and error that prejudiced your client. So I'd ask you to stick to those concepts if you would.
Okay, well, I disagree with your point, and I want to make that for the record so that I can make that on appeal for the Supreme Court if I have to go that far. But my point to you is right on page two of my reply brief, I state that a referee's findings are not included with the deference of a district judge. This didn't go to a district judge. It was a Zoom hearing, and I ordered the transcript, which makes this hearing different than other hearings. In this
Counsel,
case, go ahead.
on that point, you've cited several cases that say if you order a transcript, we don't, it's a different standard. But the cases you cite are attorney discipline cases, and
True.
they have a specific procedure as you've described it. Do you have any law saying that that procedure or that form of review applies here in a harassment restraining order proceeding?
I could not find any case law, but it doesn't mean that it's not relevant because the fact of the matter is a referee isn't a judge. They are not accorded, they can't be accorded constitutionally under the Minnesota Constitution or the US Constitution with the same deference that a judge. And if the court finds that I'm wrong on that, you find that. But I believe that under the US Constitution and the state constitution, you have to put less deference on a referee. And if you do put that deference, that will, because this can't correct constitution. If a referee gets that much deference, there's a problem there. Then I want to go on
Counsel,
to this.
what sections of the federal and constitutional, federal and state constitutions are violated, and how by utilizing a referee in this proceedings? I note that referees are used in all kinds of proceedings in district court. Their work is reviewed by a district court judge. The district court judge signs off on it or not. But if the district court judge does sign off on it, then we review the decision as if it is the decision of a district court judge. And you're saying that that whole process is unconstitutional. I'm curious as to what your constitutional argument is on that
Well,
point.
the district court judge didn't review the transcript. I ordered the transcript and he confirmed the order before the transcript was even done on the case, so he couldn't have reviewed it very carefully. So the transcript, which was filed with the court, he couldn't have reviewed it. That is completely, if that's his review, I just look at the order and then I rubber stamp it. I'm saying that violates due process of law. That's what I'm saying to this court. Is that clear or not? I'm saying it violates due process of law. And not only that, I think this court has to look at this case and go, we've got a person here who admits lying about a fake rape allegation. We've got a police report in the record in which she tells the police officer from Pequot Lakes that he stole the child. He stole the child. And
Again, it seems to me you had every opportunity to make all these arguments, and you did to the district court. And it comes again down to a credibility issue, which this court is not in a position to second guess.
I
What would
didn't
be
make this. I didn't make this argument to the district court. The district court affirmed this before I even had a chance
Well, all
to
right.
get a transcript.
I'm just going to, when I use the term district court, I'm referring to the judicial officer who heard and made findings in this case. I don't understand the law to require a district court unless they're in situations such as appeals from conciliation court or things like that, to be required to rehear the case. The appeals of the referee's decision comes to our court. And so again, back to my question, what's the principal basis that we would reverse the harassment restraining order based on disagreement with the district court's findings?
It's due process of law. There is the referee is not a district judge. She's not appointed by the governor. She's not approved by the legislature. She's not, they're not appointed under with all the due process requirements of the Minnesota Constitution or the federal Constitution. And then the district court judge, that his rubber stamping of that order doesn't make it due process. And
Okay,
the case as
counsel,
go
Judge
ahead.
Larkin here. Do you make this due process challenge in your brief?
I did not, but I didn't know that this court would even this was an issue to this court, and it was never raised by Mr. Hawley at any time before he wrote his brief in
But
response. So that's why.
you're asserting that the process by which a referee is used to hear petition for harassment restraining order and make findings of facts and conclusions of law, which are then submitted to a judge for final determination, violates due process. That's a big argument. It needs to be briefed.
Well, I can brief it if you want me to brief it.
Well, the time to brief it and the time to raise it, frankly, is in the district court. And then you appeal a decision on that constitutional issue. You can't
Well,
raise new
there's
issues.
Minnesota case law right on point that says when there's a referee, which sets a precedent for this court, and if this court doesn't agree with that, those precedents that I cited in my brief.
Telling you, counsel, is as a matter of appellate law, the appellate courts generally do not hear issues that were not presented to and determined by the district court or issues that are not adequately briefed on appeal. If this issue was not presented to and determined by the district court, and if it's not briefed on appeal, it is not properly before us. There's no need to dispute what case law says about referees. I'm just pointing out that there's a procedural issue in that you did not brief the issue and you did not raise the issue in the proceeding below.
This court can still reverse. Well, first of all, I'm not backing off on the issue. I cited the case law, and I don't have to raise that because it wasn't raised by the other side at that point either. So that's
What
my
which
point on
case
that.
law have did you cite in your brief
I
on
cited on page 2 of my reply brief, and that's because the issue of the standard of review was not raised by him or me. So he raised it in his responsive brief, so I responded to it because my understanding would have been that the standard of review was always that you would, if you ordered a transcript, that it would be clearly you could reverse it for a clearly erroneous decision, which this is, because she made fake rape allegations. She said that part of her allegations, well, I went to a counselor, and he told my counselor that I was cheating on him, which was his counselor. So he had an absolute privilege. And then the other thing was he went and told, he confronted the guy who she was cheating with, which she claimed she wasn't cheating with, which she's still cheating with him now because everybody in Pequot Lakes knows everybody and knows she's still seeing the guy. So it's absolutely ridiculous that he lied. Then the referee in the stuff I cited to you actually prevented my client from offering testimony regarding the extent of what he knew and what happened, because she said it was hearsay. But the fact is, my client, in the context of any conversation, has a right to offer why he did what he did. And he explained that the father of this person told him that she was cheating with his son. And so he confronted her, or or confront the guy and said, "What's going on here?" So the referee was so prejudiced that that's what happened. And in fact, is I'll tell you something. I got assaulted at the over at Zorba's at Thanksgiving by one of the women from the women's advocacy group
Counsel,
over this case.
you're out of order. What happened to you on other occasions has nothing to do with this appeal. Please stick with the issues you've raised in brief.
Well, I laid out, I summarized exactly in my reply brief from pages 4 and 5. The video shows no fear for her safety or security. She made false rape allegations. She admitted that there was no assault ever made on her. She made false kidnapping allegations to the Pequot police. So they took Ella, the daughter, back home, but admitted he never mistreated her. And you can see from the text that there was nothing he did wrong in that situation. Then she tries to entrap him by making telephone calls, which is in the record when she's at the ski place, because he didn't pick up right away. So she is trying to set him up for that. Then I've got here that my client has a right, a fundamental right to if he finds out that his girlfriend or wife is cheating on him, that to confront and find out if that is true. And if that's harassment to make a phone call and ask somebody, is my girlfriend or my wife cheating on me, then I don't have any due process rights. If that's no longer a right for a man or a woman, because by the way, women are cheated on all the time also, if you don't have the right to find that out, and in fact is I'd
Okay,
note, and this isn't, go ahead.
counsel, your time is up. You'll have 5 minutes on rebuttal. We'll now hear from counsel for respondent. Please identify yourself for the record before you begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Daniel Hawley, appearing on behalf of Respondent Casey Hood. You'll excuse me, I'm a little under the weather, but I didn't want to reschedule today. I think Judge Larkin, you properly raised the biggest issue here on this appeal, which is, what is the standard of review? Mr. Dahl cites to some case law in his brief. All of those cases rely on Minnesota Rule of Professional Responsibility 14, paragraph E, which sets out the fact that in professional responsibility proceedings, referee conclusions are not conclusive if there's a transcript order. And that is germane specifically to professional responsibility proceedings. In this case, the applicable standard is abuse of discretion. That's with respect to Minnesota Rule of Civil Procedure 52.01. And there are several cases cited in the brief to support that. So the question here is, was anything that happened here clearly erroneous? Did the court find that things happen that don't constitute harassment as a matter of law? Before I get into the underlying facts of why the court didn't err here, I'd also note that Mr. Dahl didn't raise a lot of the issues that he discussed with you below. He did not bring a motion for a new trial. He did not bring a motion for amended findings. I understood part of his argument to be prejudice or bias by a judicial officer. That would be a motion for a new trial. The record here is replete with text messages and other evidence that shows that there was harassment by the appellant in this case. We began the case by calling Jacob Blazer, who was a third party. He testified that he'd been sent multiple text messages. We exerted part of that as Exhibit 1 below, which was statements by the appellant about how my client was a swinger and she'd had an abortion and various other things. He indicated that those messages were inappropriate. We then provided the court with exhibits 2, 3, 4, and 5, which were email, or I'm sorry, text messages between the parties. If you review those, and I won't go into most of them in depth, you'll see a kind of a pattern, which is that the appellant sends messages and my client says, "Stop, stop sending me this. I don't want you to send me this," over and over and over again.
Mr. Hawley, let me ask you this. I mean, I think so much of the record is exhibits, right? Documents that show these text messages and our family wizard exchanges and things like that. But as I heard Mr. Dahl's argument, one of his chief arguments is that there wasn't evidence to show that your client was afraid based on the contacts that the appellant had with her and with the first witness at trial. What is the evidence you can point us to that the harassment or the claimed harassment had a or was intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of your client?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, if you look at the transcript, just about after every time that we presented an exhibit, I asked her what the effect it had on her is. She related to the court that she felt helpless, that these messages were harassing and mean, that in her testimony, she talks about this kind of building a case. She also talks about calming the waters and various other things. She testified, and testimony is just as good evidence as these exhibits that these had a substantial adverse effect on her. Now, Mr. Dahl also mentioned, this what he's calling a false rape claim. And if you look in the transcript, where that's discussed, and that really starts at page 69 of the transcript, in Mr. Dahl's cross-examination, she basically testifies that, he came at her and was saying, you accuse me of rape, et cetera, et cetera. And that she said essentially that she was sorry that she called it rape, that she felt that the encounter was disrespectful, and that she believes that she should have a say in whether the parties had sex or not. Under cross-examination, she then goes on to describe, while she might not call it a rape, I think it's open to interpretation as to whether she then described a textbook example of what someone might call a rape. There are a lot of text messages here. Now, in Mr. Dahl's brief, he also mentioned that these are family wizard messages, shouldn't have been raised below. And that they weren't relevant, I think, was generally his argument. And I just wanted to briefly touch on that. Under the statute, specifically subdivision 5, if the court finds that there have been multiple violations of an existing order, the court can extend an order for up to 50 years. And so those are family me wizard messages were presented to allow us to make an argument that it shouldn't just be a 2-year harassment restraining order. But I also think it shows a pattern of behavior that continued even after the order was issued, which makes my client's belief that the behavior would continue even more credible. Now, Judge Bjorkman, you asked what made her afraid. She also testified to her knowledge of a prior crime that the respondent had committed that heightened her level of fear about the behaviors that he was exhibiting. I think that if the court reviews the record, there isn't anything that's clearly erroneous here. Some of these statements that were made were objectively objectionable. At one point, and I believe it's in Exhibit 5, sends her a message telling her that he hopes that she gets blisters and to go hog wild and various other objectively unreasonable acts. I think that when the court looks at the totality of the evidence here, there wasn't any mistake below. A lot of these arguments that Mr. Dahl is raising were not raised below. He's trying to insert new evidence, which is not part of the re record on appeal. He made comments about his addendum at page 26, which apparently is a recommendation to vacate show cause or order for warrant, which was issued 5 months after this harassment restraining order was issued, which means it couldn't have been part of the record on appeal. It couldn't have been presented to the district court. These arguments about what the district court should have found, I think If you review those videos in particular, you'll see something. During my cross-examination of Mr. Frixell, I asked him specifically, "Do you always narrate your life?" And the reason I did that is because if you review those videos, he's essentially narrating everything that's occurring there and trying to, what my client testified to, build a case. So the fact that the district court reviewed those in light of all these text messages, all of the things that got said, Mr. Dahl's cross-examination of my client, which went into a lot of different sexual matters that the court deemed inappropriate. In reviewing that, I don't believe that the court erred in exercising its discretion to find that Mr. Frixell was not credible here. The court clearly, based on the findings, rejected Mr. Dahl's presentation of the evidence. And so I don't believe that there's anything here that should result in either a remand or a reversal. And I think the record is pretty complete with all of the evidence before the court. So if the court doesn't have any questions, I'd yield my time.
All right. I don't see any questions. So we'll hear again from Mr. Dahl with his rebuttal argument.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that there has to be some oversight or review of a referee's decision in this case, or I believe it's unconstitutional because, frankly, in this context, not only does it violate due process, it takes other rights away from my client, and then they're using it to try to revoke his criminal probation. They're using it in another context, Mr. Hawley is, which I believe violates Rule 3.4 of the ethics code. And I think even further than that, what they tried to do in this case was they make these allegations in the complaint, which you can see at the very front of my brief, which she makes the main allegations on page A12 about everything that happened. And if you look at each one of the things that they alleged in the original petition that happened, it says she contacted other business owners and defamed me. And that's not true. What happened is, and there was evidence provided that she had made allegations to my client's chiropractor, and he explained the situation to his chiropractor. And that's it actually in the record. And then it says he's financially harassed me, giving the motive for exactly why she brought this. So she's telling the court, I brought this because I want money out of Mr. Frixell. And in fact, is at the same time we were negotiating the custody and the terms of how much Mr. Frixell was going to have to pay for the baby. So what the real motive is not, it she doesn't say anywhere in this, I'm afraid. No, that was all brought out by Mr. Hawley on leading testimony that was frankly shameless. Then if you go down on the final allegation on page 12, it just says, I went, it talks about the Compass Counseling and Dan Markwitson saying he told me that, or he told my counselor that I was cheating on him. Well, that again is all within my client's privileged right. So,
Well,
Mr.
I don't see, Mr. Dahl, in the district court's order any findings that incorporate, I think, the legitimate points you're making here. I don't see that the district court based the harassment restraining order on those contacts with the chiropractor, the counselor.
Well, she did actually, and I don't have that right here, but she actually did because I quoted from her in my original brief on that. But I don't want to lose the point that I'm thinking of right now. All the stuff that Mr. Hawley tried to base this on was he came in and used all these family wizard messages. So he was sandbagging us with family wizard messages, which we really didn't even, that wasn't even part of the original complaint or anything part of it. So actually, this is how this went down. She files this petition in September or November whenever it was in that period, and says this occurred from September on, when actually all the events occurred before that. They occurred actually in June, like the incident with the where she reported him for kidnapping to the police. Most of this, I don't even know any of it that actually occurred after she said it did. And then, so what Mr. Hawley does is subsequent to that, he brings in all these our family wizard stuff, which was allowed. That was permissible contact under the original order, because that original order was amended to allow for our family wizard contact. And they never added that to their petition. No, he threw it in, and that was they could talk to each other. And there's no credible evidence whatsoever anywhere that shows that she was there. I had that marked, and I wanted to hit that on the order. I believe it is in the order. I'm trying to find it. Just a second. Oh, here it is. Page XI of the order. This is a XI of my brief. The order of the referee of 11/14/22, and item number 4. Respondent sent text messages to another male who responded to believe a relationship with petitioner. Responsive for the male, petitioner had an abortion for pregnant. All that, all this was debunked at the hearing, and basically, this had nothing to do with anything, because my client had a right to make those to contact him to find out if she was cheating on him. She had he
Okay,
had,
counsel,
yeah. Go
your
ahead.
time is up, and I think you've made your point that you think you had your client had a right to make these inquiries. And at this point, the hearing has concluded.
Your
Thank
Honor,
you for
I would
your
like you to make
arguments.
specific findings, because if I want to appeal this, I want to know if my client in Minnesota doesn't have a right to find out if his girlfriend is cheating. I'd like to have that, because I want that in writing from a court. Because if that's the case, I want to appeal that issue.
All right, counsel, you've made your point. We've heard quite enough. Thank you. Case is concluded. You'll have our decision within 90 days.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.